As we all know, anyone who's interested in the humanities will be a left-wing fanatic. But there's someone left to make a case for them, and that's my next guest, Professor Joy DeMoussy. Joy's the Director of the Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences at the Australian Catholic University. I know I repeat myself, and is president of that splendid outfit, the Australian Academy of the Humanities. Joy, what are these wretched humanities? Can you explain them to me?
Can I explain the humanities to you?
Yes, please.
Oh, my pleasure, Philip. It's a great privilege to be back here and to be given this opportunity to explain to you the humanities and the benefit and value of them. I think
it's going to be an uphill battle, Joy, but that's
Well, I think it depends on your audience, Philip, and I'm hoping your audience will be one that's very receptive to the points I'm going to make, which are to remind your audience that the humanities remind us what it means to be human. It reminds us what we are and who we are, where we've come from and where we're going. But in other ways, it also identifies an approach to the world which encourages critical thinking and encourages communication and encourages ethics. It encourages a human-centred decision-making. All questions, I would have thought, are central in a time of crisis and a pandemic, which is the time we are in currently.
Oh, look, anyone listening to that knows that it's code for left-wing nonsense, but the government has quite rightly decided to more than double the cost of a humanities degree. Joy, how significant is this policy?
Well, this is the point, Philip. It's very disturbing, and actually, this development, it's a cause for great concern, because what we fear, those of us who work in the humanities, is that this will be a great disincentive for the next generation of thinkers and workers to engage with the humanities. Increasing the fees over 100% to undertake a humanities and arts degree is quite dramatic, especially at this time. And I think the concern is what will happen to the humanities generally in this country, but what sort of workers are we producing, what sort of thinkers are we producing in the future who don't have that background or don't have that inclination or set of expertise? And I think there's the concern there.
Talking to Joy DeMoussy, and she has said elsewhere that this is potentially the greatest hit to Australia's humanities sector in a century. Now, as I've mentioned, you're president of the Australian Academy of the Humanities, of which I am very proud to be a fellow. Were you consulted by the government before the changes?
That's a very good question, Philip. We weren't consulted. I don't know who in the sector was consulted. And so typically with government policy and government policy of this scale, magnitude and impact, there would be a process of consultation and feedback. But it seems the government, it decided to impose this immediately and without consultation. And so it's not just the humanities sector that's being affected by this. It's also other parts of the package, if you like.
Well, okay, if they didn't talk to the universities, if they didn't talk to the employers, where's the pressure for this extraordinary decision coming from?
Well, that's a very good question, Philip, and it remains opaque, I think. I mean, many have speculated as, you know, the motivations behind it. The government is saying that they are in this crisis and they wish to produce job-ready graduates. And so how they define job-ready graduates are those in the science area particularly. Now, the argument is surely that we need both science and humanities graduates. It can't just be one or the other. You need a balance everywhere of the science and humanities contributing to society. So their view is, look, you know, we immediately want to push through people in certain fields, and we're promoting that and encouraging that because we're in a pandemic, and post-pandemic, that's the workforce we want to build. But, you know, education is forward-looking. It's going to take you 3 years to do a degree anyway. So in 3 years' time, surely you're going to still want a balance of graduates in both areas to make a contribution to society.
Joy, not that I ever managed to get to university, but I would have thought humanities would be quite comparatively cheap to teach.
Oh, it's absolutely efficient and very cheap. Philip. In fact, it's the cheapest of everything to teach at university because you basically have just very fundamental infrastructure, not like the technology or the medical areas where it's very, very expensive to teach. So it's a very cheap form of education. So the government is not taking that into account. It's increasing the fees and to a point where it's virtually not funding. I mean, the funding from the government per student is minimal, negligible, really. So it's basically saying if you want to do humanities, you have to pay for it almost entirely.
Are we seeing the same sort of hostility towards the humanities in, well, Europe, the US?
Well, not in this manifestation, Philip. I mean, this is quite an extraordinary government policy, actually. Certainly not government policy in the US and certainly not government policy in Europe. You know, other countries, Japan, I think, have started to look at this, but in the countries we know in Europe and the US, this is not the case.
Singapore apparently invests very heavily in the humanities.
Singapore are an exemplar, actually, of sustained and committed funding the humanities. And you can see that in the rankings, the world global rankings, they have shot up because of their commitment, their absolute commitment to the humanities and investing in it. So the Singapore universities have done exceptionally well in the humanities and continue to set the standard, really, a high, very high standard. So we'd look to Singapore for that. In India, there's investment in the digital humanities, particularly in technology and humanities. So India has seen that as a major priority. So some of our neighbours in the region have certainly seen the value of humanities and funded it. It's just so disappointing that in our own country this seems to have not been a priority.
Our mutual friend Barry Jones, also a fellow, yes. I remember him telling me something 30, 40 years ago. He was talking to the boss of IBM, which was then the giant company, long before, you know, Apple or any of the other, the Aravists, and the boss of IBM made it absolutely emphatic that IBM looked for bright graduates from the humanities because he said, we want people who know how to think. We can teach them about computers. It's a good point.
Well, this is the point that we're trying to make, Philip, that a graduate from the arts will be think critically, will engage in innovative thinking, will push boundaries, will question, will be creative thinkers. I mean, that's where creativity comes from, and that's where, you know, things start and are innovative. It's from that sort of way of thinking, and that's what the humanities teaches you. And so this is what the argument is, that, you know, you really need this skill set that's transferable from career to career. And we know in this generation they will not be in one job for the years that I've chalked up as an academic. They will go from career to career. And these transferable skills are very mobile. And the other thing, just on the IBM, it's interesting. Pre-COVID, the discussion about the workforce was around artificial intelligence and the coming of the robots. So in that space, people would say over and over again, you cannot program creativity. You cannot program creative thinking. And in that world order that is coming, whether it comes immediately post-COVID or decades later, the timeless skill set that a humanities degree will give you will be even more valued and central.
Joy, we're not opposed, are we, to the government making science, nursing and teaching cheaper? That's a good thing.
Oh, it's a fantastic thing. It's a great thing, Philip. And if there's one thing that I think we'd all support in this package is the decreasing cost for students who undertake those degrees. And that's a welcome thing, and that's tremendous. And, of course, we'd embrace that, absolutely. It's the message they're sending by increasing the cost so significantly to do an arts degree and to do humanities that's disturbing. But the other side of what you've just mentioned is absolutely right. Yes, we'd be very supportive of that.
Do we want students to be choosing a course based on the price? Surely we want them to follow their passions, their interests.
Well, education policy up until this point, Philip, has been framed around that, and to follow, for people to follow, students to follow their talent. So if you are, you have talent in certain areas, our education system has, up until this point, encouraged you to follow your passion and what you're good at. But this is a reversal of that. It's saying that it's all about capacity to pay. If you can pay for an arts degree that's really expensive, you can do that. But actually, it's really cheap to do medicine. So if you're not interested in medicine, well, that's bad luck, because that's going to be cheaper and you probably should go into that if you want to save some money. It's completely turning the Menzies vision of education post-war on its head.
That's a tricky thing to do, mentioning Menzies. That'll confuse them. I'm reminded, of course, of your own story, Joy, because you're the daughter of Greek migrants, and you know you went on to become a specialist in migration. You were wise to choose the humanities.
Oh, I think so, Philip. I guess my own story, Philip, points to the story of many people in Australia and of my generation, and that is the transformative power of education. And it gave me an opportunity coming from that background, which was very working class, migrant background, post-war, to go to university, as did my siblings, to follow our passion, actually, to give back to society, but to follow our passion. You know, if my parents were in the same situation we were then now, there is no way I could have, under this program, selected the humanities. Who could have borne that cost? My parents certainly wouldn't have.
You know, when I retire, I'm gonna go to university in my 80s. Why the hell not? And I'd like to study the humanities, and I don't know how the hell I'm going to afford it. But thank you very, very much, Joy, Professor Joy Demisi, Director, Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences at the ACU, yes, the Australian Catholic University, who doubles as Il Presidente of the Australian Academy of the Humanities.